This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. This morning, we'll check in with teams distributing anti-overdose drugs, and we'll talk about coal.
And so what we've seen at a very basic level is a decline in really high-paying jobs, $80,000 a year. Very few local businesses can even come close to matching that.
It sounds like she might be talking about Appalachia, but she's not. Stay with us. This is West Virginia Morning. Only 2 days after bars were allowed to reopen in Monongahela County, West Virginia Governor Jim Justice has again ordered them closed. That order comes as students from West Virginia University finished their first week of classes and filled downtown Morgantown in droves. Dave Mistich reports.
Justice said Wednesday that bars in Monongahela County would close Wednesday at 4 p.m. for an indefinite amount of time. After being ordered closed in mid-July, Justice repeatedly extended those closures, which stretched until Monday, August 31st. Photos published Tuesday evening on social media showed long lines of young people waiting to get into a bar in downtown Morgantown. In those photos, few could be seen wearing masks or social distancing. The governor's decision to again close bars in Monongahela County came after West Virginia University President Gordon Gee wrote an open letter to the Morgantown and WVU communities. Gee says the unsafe behavior jeopardizes everyone's health. This comes as the number of deaths from the coronavirus continues to surge in West Virginia and confirmed cases hit a new daily record. According to data from the DHHR, Monongahela County is coded as orange, a designation that would prevent public and private schools from reopening and secondary school extracurricular activities from being permitted. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
People throughout Putnam and Kanawha counties were handing out free naloxone this week. That's a life-saving drug that can reverse the effects of an opioid overdose. Emily Allen visited the Upper Kanawha Valley to learn how and when to use it. She brings us this report.
In the town of Montgomery, volunteers outside the local community college frequently have to shout over trains and traffic as they're talking to community members about naloxone.
So at first you normally hold it like this.
Montgomery is one of the communities that participated in the state Save a Life Day. More than 15 locations, hosted by recovery groups, health officials, churches, and others, were prepared to give out more than 1,000 naloxone kits to anyone who came by.
So this is the naloxone administration training.
This is Jamie Menshouse Lukmanova.
At the end of this training, you will be able to describe what an opioid drug is and why naloxone is given.
Menshouse Lukmanova is a recovery coach for students at Marshall University and one of the volunteers in Montgomery training people on how to use naloxone.
And you'll be able to describe what steps to take after naloxone is given.
Members of law enforcement stopped by. There were people working in healthcare, and some were just walking past when they noticed the balloons and yellow free naloxone signs.
So the first time I administered naloxone, I was still in active addiction. So I was really scared. to do it. But thankfully, the person had naloxone on them already. They had Narcan, actually, and Narcan was really easy to administer to them because I knew that they kept it at their house.
Annette Johnson, a recovery coach for Bridge Valley Technical and Community College, is the site leader for Montgomery.
I know that Narcan can save lives. It saves several lives.
Johnson offers weekly recovery classes for college students either in recovery from substance use disorder or others who need mental health related help. Right now, most of her classes are virtual because of the coronavirus pandemic. And that public health crisis is making the opioid crisis worse.
The overdose rate since COVID happened has skyrocketed. So I think it's important to get this naloxone out to everyone that we can.
From May to July of this year, EMS responded to roughly 2,500 overdoses. For the same stretch last year, there were about 1,900 responses. Dr. Lindsay Akre is an assistant professor at the University of Charleston School of Pharmacy. She explains the Save a Life Day event was made possible by a law that went into effect earlier this year, which established a community-based model for distributing naloxone.
It's a little easier for someone that's already in the community to get out there and reach individuals that need naloxone than it is for other individuals sometimes.
The more naloxone that's out there, Akre says, the better.
There's that community connection that helps so that they can actually reach the people that need it.
And trainers say the side effects, a runny nose, opioid withdrawal, pale in comparison to the alternative. So as the response to the coronavirus pandemic continues, people like Johnson, the Bridge Valley recovery coach, hope harm reduction services like needle exchange programs and naloxone training continue too.
It saves lives. It prevents diseases. And then there's recovery coaches there that can help and guide people, point them in the right direction, be there for support.
Save a Life Day was made possible by several recovery-related groups across West Virginia. It was a pilot event from the State Office of Drug Control Policy with support from several groups, including the CAMC Foundation, the Greater Kanawha Valley Foundation, the University of Charleston, West Virginia Healthright, Cap'n Creek Health Systems, and more. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Emily Allen.
West Virginia isn't the only state grappling with the boom and bust cycles of coal mining. There are several places across the U.S. where coal is or was mined. On the latest episode of Inside Appalachia, host Jessica Lilly spoke with Colorado native and journalist Kate Schimmel to find out how other places have created new economies after industries like coal have gone away.
Yeah, one of the challenges that I've found, actually not in my reporting, but I live in a small town that has a long history of coal mining. And one of the biggest challenges is we've seen now many years of contraction in the coal industry. So we started out with about 8 coal mines. There may even have been more before that, but what I remember is 8, and that shrunk down to 3 when I moved here. And then now we're looking at 1 where a lot of the work is automated, done by machines and not by humans. And so what we've seen at a very basic level is a decline in really high-paying jobs, jobs with a salary of median $80,000 a year. That's sort of, for our community, an incredible salary to be making, and very few local businesses can even come close to matching that. I think our median salary in the county now is somewhere in the range of $35,000. So at a basic level, you lost jobs, and then you lost the spending that those jobs allowed people to do. So you have local businesses that really struggled to sell enough, to serve enough meals. And I think at sort of a different level, we saw the community really struggle to figure out what our future is. Who are we going to be? And that was a tough process that I think we're still in the middle of. And that's what we're seeing in a lot of communities across the West. Some are sort of further along than we are. They've really thought about what they're going to do when coal really finally goes away. And some are further behind. They are still trying to find ways to bring coal back, to reopen coal mines, which is possible in some areas, but in many areas is unlikely to happen due to economic forces, social forces, regulations, a whole variety of things. And where that leaves each community is really different. And I have to say, I don't know that I've seen a single community kind of develop the entire way of responding to that. But the challenges ripple through the entire community, from the economics to the social issues and the culture of the town.
I think a lot of that sounds familiar to many of our Inside Appalachia listeners and is something that we've seen happen here in Appalachia as far as mechanization. You mentioned a lot of the high-paying jobs are being sort of replaced with machines and things like that, and mechanization sort of taking the place of that. What do you think people can do to try to reinvent themselves? How are folks out West moving forward?
What we've seen a lot of in the rural West is turning to more of a recreation or a lifestyle economy. So here in Paonia, what that looks like is we now have a cocktail bar that serves tapas. And some of that's for the community, right? Like community members go there, but that's as much for people passing through or for attracting people from the outside to come live here because Paonia is such a nice place to be. And that is hard for communities. The jobs are not as steady or as high paying as they were when we had coal mines open. And it requires some degree of planning. So it doesn't tend to be as attractive for a town to have sort of an open mine next to where they might want to recreate, right? Where they might want to go running or skiing or biking or wine tasting or whatever it is that that town wants to offer. And so figuring out how to plan for a future that might mean to some extent covering up your past is really hard. I think some of the other choices towns are making or being forced to make is just shrinking, getting smaller. Sort of the depopulation of the rural West is very real and happening relatively quickly.
Mm. Yeah, that's definitely something we're seeing here. Here in Appalachia, recreation tourism is also something that many small towns are trying, and it has brought in some jobs, but maybe not the same type of big salaries, like you mentioned, that are, you know, that people are used to in coal mining. How realistic is it to expect the recreation industry to provide living wages to residents in these rural communities? If these, you mentioned the, you know, taco stand or the, you know, selling tacos in that one restaurant, if that continues to grow and there's more businesses that grow like that, I mean, is that realistic for that kind of community to provide a living wage, you think?
I don't see recreation or lifestyle or service jobs getting up to the same level that coal jobs did in terms of wage. I think there may be some affordability questions, like housing may come down to match that. But the reality is recreation dollars are getting spread around. And more small towns like yours, like mine, are competing for people's sort of disposable income, right? And I talked to an economist about whether that can continue to grow. And his take was, yes, there is more growth to happen, right? Like people can build out more recreation, more tourism, and attract more people to their town. But at some point, there's a limit. And whether you can turn sort of tourism and recreation, people passing through, right, into permanent residence is not clear. And that's what most towns want. They want people to come through and stay, right? They don't want to keep losing young people, losing people with kids, families. They want people to come and live here. And that's a much harder thing to do. So it might be possible to have more restaurants where people could have server jobs. The question of whether your young people will actually want to do that and will stay here and raise their families is a whole other question.
Is there anything else that you could share that you found interesting and striking as a native to the region and being able to report on this and seeing your community and people move away and people also stay and invest in their community to try and find a new economy?
Yeah, I'll give you a resident's answer, not a reporter's answer, which is that when people decide to live somewhere, I think it's so important that they decide to take on everything about that place, right? And invest in helping that place be a really good community, a really effective community, whatever that looks like for your town. And I've been so struck by how different that can be from town to town. I wish there were a better lesson other than the importance of investing in your community. But certainly that's one of the things I've seen as a resident, and I suppose as a reporter too.
That was Kate Schimmel speaking with Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly back in 2018. Schimmel left High Country News in 2019 and is now with Colorado Public Radio. You can hear more of this conversation on the latest Inside Appalachia podcast. Find it at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.